So, returning to our subject, even though it's a little difficult to speak about difficulties, disappointment, distress, and disasters, without turning to our intelligence and our philosophical understanding, that tends to sort of just push them aside as saying, oh, this is just Maya, this is just imagination, this is just the material world. And then so we push them away with our intelligence, but they seem to sort of linger. So it's an interesting, there's an interesting dynamics here between the fact that we know so much, and we've hopefully we've all read the Bhagavatam and we've found our own sources of strength and inspiration. And yet at the same time, these difficulties just seem to sort of, they take over. And they have a life and a force and a power of their own. So this is a very interesting thing to think about sometimes. It's important actually to think about, because as we explained, it's one thing to speak philosophy, it's the theory. But we need to see how much or how well we're actually able to put that into application during the different challenges that inevitably come within our journey of life. So I was preparing actually a class for another occasion, and I was reading through the Bhagavatam, trying to find a powerful verse on which to speak. And I made my way through to the 12th canto, where I found in the end of the 12th chapter of the 12th canto, there were verses that sounded remarkably familiar. And I thought, I think I've read this verse somewhere before. And as I looked at the verse, I thought, I know I've read this verse before. I think it's in the first canto. And I very quickly turned back to the first canto, and I found that Sukadeva Goswami is speaking very similar verses in the first canto, one or two of them, and also almost identical in the 12th canto. And they have to do with the process of glorification of the Srimad Bhagavatam and the power of transcendental sound. So I took that little section from the 12th canto and tried to understand how it amplified the message given in the first canto, which is in the chapter where Narada and Vyasa are speaking. But this one particular verse, which is not a repeated verse from the Bhagavatam, from Sutta Goswami's transcendental lips, but is a specific verse, to me, more or less, although I've seen similar verses throughout the Bhagavatam, because the Bhagavatam is actually, the Bhagavatam is Krishna. It's Krishna. And he's very, very reassuring. Yesterday we were hearing about the attitude that a devotee should have, that he should think that for what I've done in my life, I deserve much worse than what I'm receiving, even in times of difficulty. But Krishna is not like the, I don't know if there's an Indian similarity, but in the Christian tradition, God is, he's very intolerant. Or in the Muslim tradition, he's very intolerant. He wants the heads of all those people who don't submit. It's frightening. So in the Judeo-Christian paradigm, God is very frightening. And so it's quite shocking for somebody coming from this background, I can say for myself, when you come towards this 10th canto, Krishna playing as a little boy, playing naughty, misbehaved, drinking his mother's breast milk. This may be very natural for somebody who has the sanskaras to understand, but for somebody who God is very frightening, it's a little bit too formal. What's this? How can he be this almighty God? And so, interestingly enough, we fall into the category that Lord Brahma fell into. Well, how can this be God? This can't be God. He's got to be much more powerful than this. So in our sense of his searching for his power is automatically fear. Much more powerful than us, and if we do something wrong, he could just drop something on our head and that would be the end. But in the conception of Krishna that is given to us through the Srimad Bhagavatam, it's fear. We are asked to remove this fear. This fear stands in the way. Even the sense of reverence with which we stand with our hands folded very thoughtfully and carefully, not to make an incorrect move, this also, as one advances, in the beginning you must have reverence, otherwise you'll have irreverence, and irreverence will not help you in any way. And fear is better than defiance, but once one is willing to not be defiant, then fear is not required. It's the incorrect response. So if you glorify somebody out of fear, you get a certain kind of a result. You're sort of saying, you're wonderful, stay over there. Please don't do anything to me and my family. Please just, you can protect us, please, but please don't. There's no love in that. There's no love capable when there is fear. And this is the living entity's core problem. Because of our defiance, which is inherent actually, even though now we're wishing to correct it, inherent also is fear. And as this defiance, which is ruling us now, and which causes all the dissatisfaction, disappointment and everything else, as that defiance is reduced, do you have a question? Defiance means to consciously disobey somebody. You see children when they're defiant, their parents will say to them, put this over there, and they will say no. They'll do the opposite of what their parents are requesting. So defiance is what, it's inbred in the jiva when he comes to the material world. This is why we came. There's no reason to be here if we weren't defiant. There's a whole other realm where we're meant to be in pure consciousness. And we ourselves have pure consciousness already. We think, oh, I'm struggling so much. Oh, I'm such a demon. No, we have pure consciousness. It's never removed, but it's covered. It's covered. And why is it covered? Because we want to be independent of Krishna. Independent masters of something. Independent enjoyers of something. Independent owners of something. And that something that we want to independently own, enjoy, or master belongs to Krishna. And we belong to Krishna. And that's a little crazy. We can never be that. And so in order to protect us from becoming nothing, if you can't be something, like, you know, if somebody says, I want to be a movie star, and they have none of the qualifications to be a movie star, they might end up being a nothing. So in order to protect us from becoming a nothing, Krishna kindly gives us the illusion. Yes, you can enjoy. Yes, you can be a master of something. Yes, you can do these things separate than me. And here is a realm in which you can look around left, right, all around 360 degrees and see people doing it. So you can be sure you can do it. You can become independent. You can say, and many people say, I'm not sure if I believe in God. You can make it an arbitrary thing. Some people, because they're a bit weak, they believe in God, but you don't have to. And therefore, when you hear Krishna speaking with full authority as a Supreme Personality of Godhead, some part of our heart says, I'm not sure if I accept that. Now we can become aware of that, and then we can do something about that. Or we can be unconscious of it, and then we don't think we have a problem. So it's very important that these difficulties come to us, because they're concomitant with our choices that we've made. Not only the choices we're making day by day, should I go this way, should I turn left, should I drive my car on this road or that road, not those choices, but the subtle underlying choice to remain the possessor. I possess something, it's mine. As soon as I hold onto it as mine, you will get these four things, and many more difficulties will come. And they're meant to ask you to look more carefully at what you're doing. And they're meant to ask you, are you happy doing this? And Krishna says, are you happy doing this? It's like if you have a little boy, and he's doing something ridiculous. And he keeps doing it, and doing it, and doing it, and he wants to stop doing it. He's doing it. You look at him as a parent, are you happy doing that? And he'll look at you and go, yes, I'm happy doing that, so I keep doing it. He's doing some ridiculous thing. But we don't understand that what we're doing in the material world is ridiculous. It's pointless. It's meaningless. Because we're trying to possess things that will never be ours. They'll pass through our hands in the same way you hold your hands like this with when you put your hands together, you take a big palmful of water. You hold it like this, and what happens? It drips down through all the crevices between your fingers, and it just drips down until you're left with just wet hands. That's what material life is like. So it's very, 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 very important to understand the nature of the material world. And therefore the Bhagavatam speaks in many places, in the third canto, in the fifth canto. Krishna speaks, explaining the material world and the miseries of it. And when we're in that spirit of achievement, I can do something here, I'm really going to have a fantastic life. When we come to those parts of the Bhagavatam, we go, oh, well, the Bhagavatam is so negative. You know, why is it so negative all the time? But as the fever, as Srila Prabhupada describes it, as the fever of material enjoyment goes down, how? By the experience of these things. Disappointment. I thought I was going to be a this, I'm a that. And difficulty. I hoped it was going to be really easy for me. I was going to do this, this, and this. I didn't think about that, that, and that. I was going to get married and I was going to have a happy ever after life. I've seen other people look happy. I want to be happy. And then I've got this problem and that problem. And why my child isn't as attractive as their child? And this thing and that thing and on and on. And even if you try to just say, oh, I'm not going to think like that, the mind seems to have a life of its own. It just goes, no, 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 no. And you have to listen to it. You're forced to listen to it. In the same way as if you're sitting next to somebody who's playing some kind of a player very loudly, and you can't get away from it, you ask them to turn it down, and they refuse to turn it down, and other than kind of like beating them or something, you're going to have to listen to it. So that's how mind is like that. We listen on and on and on and on and on. So it's very, very important that we come to see the inconveniences of life in the proper way. And this is why we were hearing that the devotee, as they're maturing, more and more, they're learning how to see that this inconvenience that's come upon me is somehow Krishna's mercy. And this is very important to understand. It doesn't mean that Krishna's up there somewhere in the sky with his computer and calculator figuring it all out and just dropping problems in front of us one after another. As if to say, you see, try that. He got out of that. Okay, I'll try another one. You know, and it sounds very silly, but I must laugh at myself, because in the early years of my Krishna consciousness, I genuinely felt like this, especially with Srila Prabhupada. Because he would ask us to do what seemed to be superhuman things. And then he would expect you to double it. Double it. You've got to be absolutely exhausted with what I'm trying to do now. You want me to do more? And we were in Hong Kong, and it was one thing after another, and now we can talk about it and say how glorious it was. But it didn't feel glorious at the time. It just felt like one strain, one stressful weight on the shoulder, including upon another and another. And I came to the conclusion when I was about 5 years a devotee that this is what Srila Prabhupada's business was. He would put something in front of you that you found impossible to do, give it to you, and you've got to do it because he's your spiritual master, oh boy. You've got to do it, so you try. Start working really hard at it, and after a while you get a bit good at it, because anything you do, you get better at it, so you get a little bit good at it, and then he turns around and he sees that you're getting good at it, and so he says, okay, try this, and he gives you something more, and again you're like, oh no, this is so hard, you're trying to get, and all the time, and I thought, this is what it's going to be for eternity, this is my relationship with God, all the time, a little bit more stress, a little bit more stress. Until maybe either I break, and then I break into something that I didn't know I was, it's sort of inside or something, but it's very, very stressful. And this was how I was feeling towards Srila Prabhupada at a certain point in my Krishna consciousness. This was in 1975 here in Melbourne, and also when we moved towards America. And it was very unhealthy, actually. Very, very unhealthy. And it stemmed from misunderstandings, obviously. But I didn't understand what a misunderstanding was. I was too immature. So I was carrying this sense of fear, this sense of... And I didn't have it in the beginning, because in the beginning it seemed easy. But it got harder. And so then, at a certain point, we had a very blessed darshan with Srila Prabhupada, an essential darshan too, because without it I don't think I would have remained very long as a devotee. I would have left with a very bad taste in my mouth, and I would have been convinced that this was not something that was beneficial to most people. But Srila Prabhupada saw the unhealthy condition, and he took some time with us, and he also was puzzled, actually. He was actually puzzled. It wasn't that he empathized with us. He was like, what is the problem? Because he's seeing in a healthy way. So a person who's seeing in a healthy way, a doctor, when you walk into the doctor's office and you tell the doctor, doctor, you know, I've got all these symptoms. You know, he immediately says, what is the problem? Because he's healthy. So he wants to see how to cure your problem. If you walk into the doctor's office and think, you know, everyone should have all these symptoms, and he's got a problem, he doesn't have a headache, what's wrong with him? You know. So sometimes we think in these funny ways. So using my own embarrassing example, I remember we sat down and Prabhupada said, what is the difficulty? And Prabhu said, it's not my difficulty, Srila Prabhupada, it's her difficulty. Spontaneous. Then I was like, well, yeah, I mean, certainly, obviously, it was my difficulty. And I tried to work out what my difficulty was, but I couldn't say to him something like, I'm scared of you. Couldn't say that to Srila Prabhupada. Never would think of saying such a thing. It was so out of place. But indirectly, gradually, as I began to relax with him, somewhat, because he was always guru, I began to say things like, when we were in Hong Kong, it was so difficult. And then he said things like, then why did you stay there? And I thought, why did I stay there? You made it there. He's very expert. Why did you stay there? you could have gone to stay with your mother and father. Why didn't you tell me? I'm like, we did tell you. He was very mysterious, the expert doctor. But he went on and on into the difficulties, and some of them came up, and some of them remained and came up later. But as they came up, I would look at his face, and despite whatever he was saying, whatever clever ways he was psychologically trying to work on improving my state of mind, his eyes, I remember his eyes, he was so concerned. Just like if you go to the doctor and he looks at you and realizes, oh, this person has got a life-threatening condition. You may solicit from the doctor his full concern. He may give full attention to you for some time. So Srila Prabhupada's eyes were so concerned. How to get this girl out of this confused state of mind? And I remember at one time he started talking to me. He spoke to me about marriage, husband and wife, because Prabhu had said, I think it's her difficulty. So he was wanting to correct my state of mind. So he was speaking about the importance of inner marriage, the wife follows the husband, and he was talking like this. And inside I was thinking, oh, why is he telling me all of this? I can't do this. I don't even want to do this. I'm a Western girl. No, I'm just saying these things. But I couldn't say anything. So I'm sitting there just saying, in India, the culture is so nice. You know, the wife, she follows her husband. And if the husband is away, she misses him so much. And our relationship is exactly opposite to that. So finally, I got up, you know, out of exasperation, stop. I said, but Prabhupada, I wasn't brought up in this way. And he just looked at me very calmly. He didn't lose any calmness at all. And he said, yes, I know. He said, but if something is good, you should try for it. And when he said it, it was not like you have to do it. It was like, this is good. You should do this. It will help you. And I felt calmed because I didn't feel like he was saying to me in this fear-ridden way, if you don't do this, you know what's going to happen to you? It wasn't like that. And as I saw as we went through the conversation, that he was emphasizing things that were very important to do, but he was putting no force, no external force. There was force out of the depth of the relationship, but there was no force like a threat. If you don't do this, you're going to go to hell. So he continued, and then the next, he had to stop to have his lunch. So we went out of the room, and I felt immensely relieved because some of my things, the misunderstandings, were somehow or other being released. But there was still some activity. And so we took our prasad and he took his, and then he rang his bell again. And he said, tell him to come back. So we came into the room. This was in Fiji. And Prabhupada was staying in a house. And we were staying in another house nearby. So Srila Prabhupada, we came in, paid our obeisances, and Srila Prabhupada said, so what is the solution? First, what is the difficulty? What is the solution? And I saw during this experience that to Srila Prabhupada there was sort of no doubt. Just like if somebody told me, is Chaitanya Prabhu here in this room today? I would say, yes, he's right there. Right? Anyone, is Chaitanya Prabhu in this room today? Yes, he's right there. You can see him. Now our difficulty is, if there is a difficulty, we can't see Krishna quite so tangibly. And Prabhupada would answer that, you look into the temple room, you can see Krishna very tangibly. Then our difficulty would say, yes, but we can't talk to him and he talks back. I can't hear him quite so tangibly. I can hear Chaitanya. If he says, Mataji, this is something I have to tell you, I can hear it. But I can't hear Krishna quite so tangibly. What do I do about that? But to Srila Prabhupada, there was no doubt like that. There was no confusion like that in his consciousness. Because Krishna was as tangible to him as Chaitanya Prabhu is tangible to us. And he could hear Krishna as tangibly as we can hear Chaitanya if he speaks. And so that is why it is so important for us to understand that without his grace, we will move very slowly in Krishna consciousness. Without his grace, without his weighty presence in our lives, we will go like this, kind of around and around like I was going, even with his presence, but with a confusion in my mind as well. So the confusion was blocking the accessibility to his presence. But with his presence and with guidance of those who have taken shelter of him and the Guru Parampara, we can make steady steps forward. And the reason why I can say this is because I've done it myself. And when I see new devotees, I can see, oh, I was like that. Oh, I remember when it was like that. I remember that problem. And then I go, oh, then I don't have those problems anymore. I still have problems. Don't have those problems anymore. And I still have a long way to go. But if I have traversed this much area, I must be able to do the rest. It's just logical. It's not any credit. It's just logical. I may not get A marks, top of the team. I may just kind of fumble along at my own speed. I may have my own shortcomings. That's okay. But Krishna's mercy is guaranteed. And this is what Maharaj Parikit and his story is meant to provide for us, this sense that Krishna's mercy is guaranteed. He will reciprocate with you. Now here's the problem, because there is one, right? I think we all agree there's a problem. It's not so easy. So here's the problem, that Krishna is so wonderful. He will not interfere with your free will. He will not impose himself upon you. He will not force you to love him, because you cannot love if there is force. So don't be afraid that he's sitting up there calculating how I'm going to force this person to become my surrendered devotee. He's not like that. He says, I am seated in everyone's heart. So he's seated with you. And he says, from me comes knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness. If you want to forget him, he will give you that. It's him doing it, but he will give you forgetfulness. It's not just that you forgot. You wanted to forget, and he gave it. And if you want remembrance of him, he will give you that as well. So what we really need is, we need to hear more about him, to become more educated in what he is like. And Maharaj Parikit, at the time of his death, for 6 days, right up to the 7th day, he was listening, and he was listening with rapt attention. Why was he listening with rapt attention? Because he had the greatest difficulty, disaster, everything you could weigh on it, right there. He wasn't afraid, however, but he was very grave. In 7 days, I'm going to die. And he was qualified, much, much more qualified than we would perhaps be in a very long time. He was qualified because he could fix his mind. His mind wasn't jumping around under the influence of our previous desires and our previous activities and their force upon us. Our mind jumps here and there and goes towards other subjects. But his mind wasn't jumping around. He was fixed in his hearing. And the 12th canto is the end of his story. Interestingly enough, Sutta Goswami is the speaker of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the whole Bhagavatam. And he is speaking because he was present when this discourse took place between these two personalities, Sukadeva and Maharaj Parikshit. And in the sixth chapter, end of the fifth chapter in the 12th canto, Sukadeva Goswami himself, he says, I have now finished giving all my instructions to you, to the king. And this person, and he points to Sutta Goswami, and he says, this person will give these instructions, will speak this knowledge again in the future to a series of sages who are eager to hear this particular knowledge. So Sukadeva himself chose Sutta Goswami as his successor. And in the 12th canto, Sukadeva Goswami, first of all, in the very beginning, he goes through all of the succession of kings, not all of them, but a succession of kings that will take place after Krishna leaves. So now he's foretelling. Previously he's speaking Puranic history. Now he's speaking into the future. And as he's speaking, as you read this first chapter of the 12th canto, you begin to see how degradation is coming, declining, declining. The leadership is declining, down, 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 until there comes a point where there are many leaders, and they're completely corrupt, and they have very erratic tempers, and they're always looking at other people's wives, and they want women, and they want wealth, and they're plundering. And if you look closely, you can see this today. If you examine the character, not the characteristics, but the character of many of today's leaders, there's so much corruption. Because power corrupts. If you don't have a very, very strong character and a very, very pure heart, when you get all this power, and it makes you, it goes to your head, and you start thinking, and this is actually what he explains, and these kings start thinking, how can I keep this role, this position, this post, and give it to my son? He should also rule the country, and my grandsons, and my whole family. We're going to take over. We're going to do this, this, and this, and to do that, we have to get rid of those and those because they're our enemies. And we have to work out this, and we have to work out a strategy. And I have the army at my disposal, and I have this, and I have that, and I'll get this, and I'll take that, and I'll control like this, and this, and this. This is how the mind works of a corrupt leader. And Kali Yuga is full of corrupt leaders on every level. It's one of the symptoms of Kali Yuga. And in the third chapter, Bhumi Devi laughs sarcastically at all these so-called kings who are trying to control her, as we heard yesterday. They want control. And we're like little tiny Ishwaras. We say, I don't want a country, it would be too much of a headache. I only want this. Now don't touch this. This is mine, okay? Don't bother me. So we're also, we want something from the earth. Something from this world we want as ours. But Maharaj Parikshit wasn't like that. He was never like that. And especially he wasn't like that when he's hearing about Krishna's pastimes. He's hearing and hearing, and then Sukadeva Goswami gives him his last instructions. And after that, then he asks the king, are you ready? And he says, please give me permission now, after worshipping his guru, he says, please now give me permission to take my mind and focus it fully in meditation on the Lord. And he does that. And when he focuses his mind completely on the Lord, his senses become inactive, inert. He doesn't need a material body, because now he's focused on the absolute substance of reality. And so he's focused, focused, focused like that, and he just stops breathing. And his material body remains just sitting there. So by the time the snake bird concoction who was supposed to kill him arrives to kill him, he has already left this world. And his body is just sitting there. And the bird comes, the snake bird comes in, goes in the form of a Brahmin who comes very near, and then he turns into a snake and a bird mixed, and he bites the king, and his body goes up in flames. And everybody cries, laments. Oh! Why? Because he's so dear to them. He's the king. He's a righteous king. We can't even imagine that. There's no one like that. Even the next person comes in and his publicity is good. Says, you know, he's going to do everything for the people. He's going to stop this bad habit. He's going to stop this. And in a little while we think there's some hope. But who can turn around Kali Yuga? Nobody can. So this king is the last king like this. And everyone is crying. But Maharaj Kriket himself, he's gone. He's gone to where he belongs. And that's what we have to do. We have to go to where we belong. But in order to do that, we have to trust that there is such a place. We have to meet somebody from there who can tell us, oh, yes, you must come. This is where you belong. There's a simple story that is told to children in schools about a duck. It's called the ugly duckling. And there's this one duck, I'm sure you've heard it, who's a little peculiar. And all the other ducks don't like this one because he's just a little different in shape and size. And so when he tries to kind of nudge in with the whole group of ducks, they all, the flock, all kind of move away from him. They don't like him. And he tries in various ways to make himself comfortable with the flock of ducks. But every time he does it, the ducks just kind of push him away. Go away. You're strange. And so then he feels so lonely, because he can't fit in. And one day he's wandering by himself with this deep feeling of loneliness. Why do they treat me like that? Why is my life so difficult? And he's wandering along and he sees another group. And he sees this group and they're very, very peaceful. And as soon as they see him, they go, oh, come, come. And they welcome him. And he's astonished. They're so nice to me. And he goes closer and he doesn't understand anything. But the story is that, of course, that the second group are swans. They're not ducks. And he, too, was a baby swan wandering around in the company of ducks. So we are always out looking for baby swans wandering around in the company of ducks. And we welcome them and say, please, come and be with the swans. Because a swan's business is to discern. A swan can take, if you mix milk and water together, a swan can take the milk and leave the water. You can take the best part and leave the rest. Whereas ducks kind of splash around, they're quite clumsy, and they make a lot of mess, and they're very loud and everything. The swan is more delicate, more graceful, more subtle. Of course, we welcome ducks as well. But we particularly welcome swans. They fit in. So we want to somehow or another understand where we belong. We want to somehow or another understand that we are not ducks, we're swans, which means that we are not material bodies and minds and people. People, as we call ourselves, we are temporarily people, we're not impersonal, but this body that we're wearing is like our clothes. I'm certainly wearing this black jacket today. I can't deny it. But I would take it off later if the weather changes. And I want, when I take it off, I want to feel like, oh my gosh, what just happened to me? I'll just take it off. So for somebody who is actually in transcendental consciousness, they see everything, as we heard, as the mercy of the Lord, and they use whatever they have acquired by their past previous activities, they use it and they try to offer it to Him. They try to please Him with it. In the same way as if you want to worship the Ganga, Mother Ganga, you take some water, everyone knows, and you pour it back into the Ganga, because Ganga water is so valuable that we give her back her own valuable water as an offering. So there is something very profound in that. Everything belongs to Krishna, but it's landed in my care, so I want to give something back to you. Of course it's already yours, but I want to develop the mentality of also being yours. And I'm sick of my fascination with this external material energy, because it's blocking my opportunity to actually surrender to you. It's your energy and it's very powerful, and I respect that you've made something extraordinary there. It's completely overwhelming me, but I would like to become just a servant in your hands. This is what comes gradually, step by step. This is why we have to hear. So today we've gone all together backwards, and now I want to read this verse with you. We don't have time to go through the word for word to get, you know, individually, but it's a wonderful verse. Sankirtyamano Bhagavananta Shrutanu Bhavo Vyasanam Hipumsam Pravisya Chittam Vidhunotyasesham Yata Tamorit Kopramam Ivati Vata. Sankirtimana, being properly chanted about, Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Ananta, the unlimited, Shruta, being heard about, Anubhava, his potency, Vyasanam, the misery, he, indeed, Pumsam, of persons, Pravisya, enter, Chittam, the heart, Vidhunoti, cleanses away, Ashesham, entirely, Yatha, just as, Tama, Tamaha, darkness, Arka, the sun, Abram, cloud, Eva as Ati Vata, a strong wind. Now this verse, if you can memorize any verse, this verse is a wonderful verse to memorize. When people properly glorify the Supreme Personality of Godhead, or simply hear about His power, the Lord personally enters their hearts and cleanses away every trace of misfortune. Just as the sun removes the darkness, or as a powerful wind drives away the clouds. Now, are there any words that stand out to anyone that's interesting in that verse? I'll read it again and then you can tell me. When people properly glorify the Supreme Personality of Godhead, or simply hear about His power, the Lord personally enters their hearts and cleanses away every trace of misfortune. Just as the sun removes the darkness, or as a powerful wind drives away the clouds. Any words?
Yes.
Personally, yes.
Simply.
Cleans away every trace of misfortune.
Clears away every trace of misfortune. So what's the word that stands out to you?
Misfortune.
Misfortune, yes?
Yeah. What is this like? Why only Krishna's power? Why not this activity? Normally there is Krishna's activity, but here it says Krishna's power.
But the word is anubhav. Anubhav, here is power. Everything is included within Krishna's power. Even His leela is included within Krishna's power. And the word anubhav has much more to it than power. Of course, English can't convey the depth and the subtleties of the Sanskrit language. So we have to choose a word. So power is a very important aspect, but anubhav includes more. Any other words? Yes?
It says, when properly glorified, and then it says just simply here.
So what words were interesting to you? Properly. Anyone else? Did properly strike them? Yeah, thank you. It struck me. Many times I've read this, and this morning even I was thinking, what does it mean to improperly? How do you improperly glorify?
Unattentively.
Huh?
Like not attentively.
Not attentively? Could be, yes. What else?
Hear from unauthorized.
You hear from unauthorized people? You hear something that's not actually authorized? Yes?
And you don't perceive Him as the Supreme.
When you don't perceive Him as the Supreme?
Or the independent.
Yes?
When you glorify Him with the intention of glorifying yourself.
When you glorify Him with the intention of glorifying yourself?
Like Shishupala and Kamsa.
Shishupala and Kamsa, ooh. But they didn't actually glorify Him.
The way they criticized Him, but not the
glory. Okay, so you're saying that their mood was critical when they said, you're this, you're this, you're that. But Saraswati turned their words around to say, see, they can only glorify Krishna. But they were very malicious. Yes, if you have a malicious intent. Yes?
Fully.
Fully. Fully. Very nice. These are all very nice. Any others?
With the material intent.
With the material intention? Yes. That's another improper. What's another one?
When the cause of loving Him is fear.
With fear. When you properly glorify Him, you should not have fear. Yes, that's a good point. Yes. You should not have envy. Very good points. These are all very helpful points. Yes.
Add mental speculation to it.
You shouldn't be thinking He's really like this, and glorification is inaccurate. Yes. Yes.
With love you glorify.
With love you glorify. And one that I asked my husband this morning about this, and nobody mentioned this, but you all would have if you had had a chance, was that you, in the impersonalists, they glorify Him as Ishwara. But in their conception, Ishwara does not mean the Ishwara as we think of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but they have an impersonal conception. So they glorify Him, but they're thinking by glorifying Him, we're glorifying the unlimited impersonal. So the glorification is not proper. So all of these things are very useful. So then, when people properly glorify the Supreme Personality, or simply hear about His power. So why is the word simply striking? Yes.
They cannot glorify them simply by hearing. You will still glorify it.
Ah. If you can't glorify him properly, you can hear of his power. Yes? Without any full faith, that's the properly, improperly glorifying.
I don't know that Krishna really exists or not, but maybe he might exist. Okay.
I see. So then, yes, so there's simply, but another way simply is, you simply is one way, is just do this one thing. One way is to be something simple, or do, but the other way is to just do this one thing. If you, and as you mentioned, if you can't glorify him properly, for all these reasons that we just mentioned, which are all present within us, if you can't glorify him properly, then hear about him. Hear about him. Hear about his qualities and his potency. Hear about who he is, what he's capable of doing. Hear about his position. And that will lead you to be able to properly glorify him. Sankirtimano. And then the next word that came up was that he will personally enter the heart. Why is that striking? Yes.
To have a relationship.
To have a relationship. That he cares enough about you that he says, excuse me, you're infinitesimal, but I will personally enter your heart. He's not indifferent to us, even though we are so small. Yes?
I have a question with that.
Yes.
What feature of the Lord? Is it still Paramatma or is it Bhagavad Krishna?
This is saying Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So within our heart we always have the feature of Paramatma. And he gives neutral instructions. If you have done something in the past, and you wanted to do it again, he remembers that, and he says, now's a good time to do such and such and such and such, but such and such and such and such might not prove very happy to you. But you wanted to do it, so do it. So Paramatma travels within the heart of every jiva, but he's neutral. He just tells you what you need to know. He's not partial to you. He doesn't take your side against another person's Paramatma. He's neutral. But Krishna's not neutral. He personally enters. He personally says, I will take care of that person.
It's Krishna.
It's Krishna himself. It's the form that you worship. It's your Ishtadev. Whoever you worship will enter your heart and drive the chariot. Imagine what a different journey it would be if you had a competent driver.
there, down,
everywhere. Ramite, around the whole universe, we've been driving and driving and driving. Never found what we're looking for, so try the next spot. But here now, Krishna's saying, I will personally enter your heart and cleanse us away. Yes.
Now, what is the connection with spiritual master?
The spiritual master is considered like the person who Krishna wants you to learn from how to love him.
He helps us clean the way.
He gives you instructions that are Krishna's instructions. So if we see our spiritual master separate from Krishna, he's just an amazing person, then we're missing part of his potency we're not aware of. Because Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, this is my process. You accept somebody to be your guru guide, and here's how you should serve them, and this is what they should do, this is what you should do. He's in charge of, and he says himself, I come in the form of the spiritual master. So this may be a very difficult conception for us to accept, but everything is towards Krishna. Guru is for Krishna. Everything is towards Krishna. So Guru is always there, even in our service to Krishna. Guru is always ahead of us. You could say there's a parampara, and we're here following. But if we forget where we're going, our progress will be slower. if we get a very fixed understanding that I'm going to Krishna, this is what my natural position is, to be with Krishna and serve Krishna under the guidance of Guru, then it becomes something different. Do you know what I mean?
He says, I personally enter their hearts.
You're not properly hearing. But that's because we're tiny and we're trying to fit Krishna's instructions into our conception. But we have to have faith that Krishna's all merciful, and our just like we heard about the devotee who was afraid of losing the tulsi beads. So it's natural, because the tulsi beads, we know the meaning of the tulsi beads, we know the significance of the tulsi beads, and we're going into an operation. That's all natural and appropriate. But at a certain point, it's as if Krishna says, don't worry, I'm taking care of you. And then we're able to release our fear. That yes, I try my best, but Krishna's taking care of me anyway. I'm doing my part and Krishna, he's doing everything else. So this is the Krishna doing everything else part. So we know what we must do day by day, what our services are, and our respect and our worship of Guru, and how he is also, we feel him guiding us. But this is something extraordinary, where Krishna is saying, I will enter your heart and I will remove all the misfortune. Isn't that amazing? Mm. Nobody said yes. I don't know if you're all stunned or if you don't think it's amazing, but it's amazing. Krishna is so personal. He's so personal. But we're so used to impersonalism because we've been living in the material world in different bodies for a very long time. So we're like, what? It's very amazing. Do you feel no fear? Ah, so that was a moment, right? Imagine if that was there all the time.
Wow.
There you go. That's what we're talking about. Imagine if we were in that consciousness all the time. We've all experienced it, but then it disappears again. And there we are again, struggling with the lower modes of nature. We've all had an experience, or we wouldn't be here. Even if it's a little experience. But Krishna is saying, I will take care of everything. Don't be afraid. And how? How will you do that? Well, you know, doing everything else. You know, you think, everything is coming from me. Everything rests on me as pearls are strung on a thread. And do you know the interesting thing about that statement? When you see a pearl necklace, do you see the thread? No. So how do you know there's a thread inside?
They're properly tied.
They stay together, right? They stay together. So we deduce, or whatever the word is, we understand there's a thread inside because all those pearls are staying next to each other and we hold them up like this. They can't do that. If I take a handful of pearls, I can't throw them up in the air and they'll all stay together. So we have to be always looking like this, looking at the material world, looking to see Krishna. Because that's what we're dying for. We're searching for. We're longing for. We're turning left and right looking for Krishna, but we don't recognize that. But when we hear about him sufficiently, and I can say whenever I have to do a retreat, I have to do a lot more preparation and my consciousness goes up immediately because I'm reading, and I'm reading with a bit of urgency because I have to have something to say. So this is the test. We can all experience this. The more we hear, the more real Krishna seems, and the more he seems to stay with us. But he's saying, I'll personally enter your heart and cleanse all the misfortune away. So I think if I keep going, I'm going to get into trouble from the powers that be. But yes, one question. Years later I wondered about all of that, and I understood that there was a certain point in the tests that were going on, the testing situation, where I got angry at Srila Prabhupada. And then I thought, well, that's not very nice, and so I sort of pushed it away, but it remained there. And I felt that it was just like if you get a small thorn in your hand, and it can start to grow red all around, and then you can see it go red up your arm because it's infected. And then the doctor comes along and pulls that out, puts something on it, and it starts to heal. So for me, I remember even the moment that I got really angry with Srila Prabhupada and thought, this is too much. And it didn't go away. It just sort of, I wasn't mature enough to be able to take that to somebody, or especially to take it to him. I was too scared, never would have dared do that. So it just sort of festered. And then everything came on top of it, didn't remove it. I got this nice situation, that, but underneath there was something troubled. So when we came to talk to him, it was like he opened it up. What is the problem? And a little bit I was able to express, even when I said I wasn't brought up in this culture, it was a brave thing to say. Because normally you say yes to the prophet. But I couldn't say that. I had to say, I don't accept this. But I said it with respect now. So I think the time was right. The time was right to be able to do something. And Srila Prabhupada was concerned all along, appreciative all along for the service rendered. He was keeping in contact with us. There was no external tension. But there was something in my heart that now was coming to the surface. And it was cleared. And I felt immensely grateful that it was cleared. Do you have more to ask on that?
I'm just thinking, trying to relate to one second. Suppose we feel a stress, or we feel something in the middle of life, or we're feeling the stress, like we're doing spiritual things. What should be our attitude? Should be a change in attitude? If we are feeling all this,
yes.
Very stressful,
yes.
So then, what could be
a change? A breakthrough? I think at some particular point it comes to the surface and you have to pray. And oftentimes there's a devotee is needed to be able to hear it and therefore remove it to some degree, and one can go on with one's process from there. We can talk about this another time. Keshava has arrived. Hare Krishna. I'm not sure if you're sitting here when Keshava arrives. Of course. Time to go. Yeah? Time for them to go and me to go too?
That's
what I mean. Yeah. You were late, that's why I talked to them.
I gave you as much time as I could. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
The sun rose and just hit